A fisherman catches unexpected bounty.
They worked side by side on the boat. Once they got home, they'd be in bed together.
I think he saw someone younger, someone he could take care of.
But a net cast for romance also catches a tangle of lies.
He didn't play well with others.
If I tell you, I gotta kill you.
With three lovers locked between the devil and the deep blue sea.
I'm pregnant. Just make me sick!
Maybe really angered the wrong people and it was coming back to roost.
From the flies to the maggots to the smell, just to the pure putrid body. You're having a whirlwind of nasty.
Love may be blind and marriage bliss, but divorce is murder. On the edge of Biscayne Bay, Ed Bozarth is living the Southern Florida dream.
But his relationship with water meant freedom. Meant freedom from property taxes, freedom from Uncle Sam. He was running his shrimp boat.
Ed keeps to himself, especially since his bitter second divorce.
He was the quiet guy in the corner, observing everybody. Wasn't quite a recluse, but to those that didn't know him, it would appear that way. Once you got to know him, he was the type of friend that would give you the shirt off his back to help you.
Ed's happy, living the life of a reconfirmed bachelor. But all that changes when Denise Morrison steps into his life.
Excuse me, are you Ed?
Who's asking?
I'm Denise. Down over there, they told me you could use a hand.
When my dad met Denise, she was down at the docks looking for work.
Denise desperately needs a job, but work on the water isn't easy to come by.
To work as a shrimper, it takes being able to stay awake all night, being able to know where you're at on the water, even in the dark, to have a lot of brawn, pretty much balls of steel.
Well, I'm tougher than I look.
She had a good sense of humor.
Please, I really need this.
So Denise was in the midst of a custody battle with her divorce. She had two twin girls, and she wasn't allowed to see them.
Just give me a chance.
She was willing to get down and dirty and do the hard stuff.
Please?
And do what everybody would say that a woman couldn't do.
Come back at 8 tonight. And don't be late.
The first night's work goes very well.
Denise did have what it took to do the shrimp pose.
You did good, kid. Go get some rest. Come back tonight. What's wrong?
Well, I don't really have any place to stay. But I can do laundry.
Come on.
Then he gave her a place to stay, and I think that is what attracted her. I mean, they worked side by side on the boat, and then, you know, once they got home, they'd be in bed together.
Their attraction is immediate, despite a huge age difference.
Ed was roughly 30 years older than Denise.
Their age difference didn't affect their relationship at all. They didn't see age barriers.
The age gap does mean that Ed's seen a lot more of the world than Denise.
Ed Bozarth had a reputation of kind of having a mysterious past.
Before he was a shrimper, Ed was a pilot who may have worked covertly.
Supposedly, Ed worked for the DEA or worked for the federal government, and supposedly he smuggled drugs from Colombia and he flew planes, and it was all like black ops kind of stuff.
What is this?
Nothing.
I don't think he was open to discussing it because he didn't want to potentially cause a death.
Ed, tell me.
If I tell you, I gotta kill you.
And I prefer to kiss you.
Denise and Ed's relationship grows stronger over the next 3 years, which is fortunate. She's got big news.
What's going on?
I think I'm pregnant.
Maybe you'll get rid of those things now that you're gonna have the real deal.
She loved to collect things like ceramic dolls. And I know Denise was ecstatic to have a baby with my dad.
And baby Billy makes his dad, Ed, proud too. But the happy family is soon in for a massive shock.
Can I help you?
I'm Jennifer Weston's daughter. Your daughter.
Ed's never met his daughter, Ariana. He broke up with her mother before Ariana was born.
You want to come in?
Ed only found out about her existence years later, after she'd been put up for adoption at the age of 3.
When I met him face to face for the first time, that was the most amazing feeling.
That's your cousin. Look at that. It's too funny. But I gotta show you this. Hang on. This is my baby.
I'd love to see her in action.
Well, you stick around long enough and I can make that happen.
It's a lot for Ed, Denise, and the new baby Billy to take in.
It took a little bit of getting used to. It was pretty much almost like sisters. I mean, we practically could be. She's only 3 years older than me.
Ed invites Ariana to move in. Psychotherapist Stacy Kaiser and forensic psychologist Brian Russell are not anticipating smooth sailing ahead.
Ed really does become a safety net for Denise, whose life has been turned upside down. She has nothing. I mean, he really is a knight in shining armor, and a woman like her is the damsel in distress. And so when Ed's daughter, Ariana, shows up out of the blue, it's very possible that Denise could end up being jealous, worried that she's gonna have some attention taken off of her, that his love is gonna go somewhere else. And she can also be jealous for their child, who she may feel deserves all of his attention.
Usually when people get married, or even when they meet each other, you sort of know the fundamental things about the other person, like whether they have kids or not. In this case, for Denise, not so. Not only is there this daughter, but this daughter is close to her age. I have to think that Denise has lots of questions, like, why didn't he know about this girl? Why has he not had a relationship with her up to now? How are we gonna divide up our limited space? Are we going to be feeding and housing this girl for the indefinite time? And so it really sort of changes the deal that Denise thought she was making when she got into this with Ed.
The full house becomes even more crowded when, just a few months after showing up unannounced, Ariana gives birth to a baby boy, Alex.
Denise was very proud of the fact that she was a young grandmother, and she would often joke about it.
And this young grandmother is about to get married.
My dad and Denise eloped and I believe they might have gotten married on a cruise ship.
But the honeymoon is short-lived.
I can't believe it. It's just too far. Hey.
Where were you?
We were just out for a walk.
For 4 friggin' hours?
Come on, chill, kid.
I am not your kid. I am your wife, and this isn't working.
She had to share my dad's attention with my son and I. And I think that might have sparked a little bit of that jealousy.
Babes.
No, don't.
Babes.
No, what? Seriously, don't.
What am I supposed to do? Okay, she doesn't have a place to stay.
Well, you better figure out something. Otherwise, I'm out of here.
One night, a routine argument erupts into a screaming match.
You are the most pathetic, weak man I've ever met. You just make me sick!
Denise and my dad had a big fight. Denise wasn't happy about something.
Don't do this.
I don't know exactly what.
Don't do this!
He didn't understand at all why she was gone. She didn't give him any explanation or anything.
But she does give him good reason to be angry.
I'm stuck with Ed.
You have us!
As long as she was there, it became a living hell to her.
My advice to my dad was to leave her.
After a lover's quarrel, Denise Bozarth storms out of the South Florida home she shares with her husband, Ed.
And she didn't return for roughly about a month.
Can we talk? Alone?
When Denise comes back, she drops a bombshell.
I didn't mean anything.
She's been sleeping with someone else.
I'm sorry.
My advice to my dad was to leave her. Just cut ties with her, because if she loved him, she wouldn't have done that to him.
I think Ed did take her back because he did love her.
Billy needed his mom, and he wasn't going to deny a child its mother.
There are couples who can recover from one partner's infidelity. But in Ed and Denise's case, when a guy thinks he's got a woman sort of under his control because he's got all the power, is that they often get surprised when the woman doesn't like being in that position and then does something to exert some power of her own. And I think that's what Denise did here in taking off and having this fling.
There are a lot of different reasons that Denise could have gone outside of the marriage. She could be a restless and impulsive person. She clearly has a lack of respect for Ed. It could also be that their age difference is coming into play here. Ed has reached an age where it is possible that his sex drive has reduced, and so it could be that she's literally gone outside of the marriage simply to fulfill those needs.
The number one thing that we'll look at now to see if Denise's remorse about having cheated on Ed is genuine is whether or not there's a recurrence.
Less than 2 years later, the Bozarths have a baby girl, Abigail.
He was all excited about having a girl. She was like a princess. She could do no wrong.
Ed is thrilled, and so is Denise, albeit for different reasons. Ariana has joined the army and is off to North Carolina and then Germany.
I moved out of my dad's house because of the tensions between myself and Denise. Denise was very happy to see me go. She was happy to have my dad back to herself.
Together, Ed and Denise agree that time is right for a change. Ed retires from commercial fishing and finds a whole new way to be close to the sea.
He bought the boat because he wanted to get away from all the property taxes.
They dock the boat in Gilbert's Marina and join its eclectic and tight-knit community of people who live aboard their vessels.
A lot of liveaboards come to the Keys because they're trying to get away from something. It could be financial problems, it could be a spouse, it could be a crime they committed.
See, it's the one with the dark blue awning.
Impressive.
Ed names his boat the U2.
Come on, isn't this great? Isn't this baby amazing?
It was large enough to live in. Certainly, it's questionable whether it was large enough for a family of four. I think the freedom of living on a boat appealed to Ed.
The Bozarths have barely settled into their new live-aboard life when tragedy tears them away.
Hello?
Ed's mother is stricken with a fatal lung disease.
When?
Pulmonary fibrosis.
Yeah.
Ed and Denise rush to her side in Inverness, Florida, 350 miles north of the Keys. Soon after, Ed's mother passes away. It's a terrible time for Ed, but Denise steps up and helps him settle his mother's affairs. They move into her house temporarily, where Denise makes herself at home.
When Ed's mother died, he came into about $650,000.
She enjoyed living in Inverness. She liked the house. She liked the lifestyle.
It was a big house. It was a beautiful house.
And that's what she wanted for her kids. She didn't want to be confined to a harbor, to a boat.
And most definitely plenty of room for any size doll collection.
She even makes a friend, a local waitress.
Barbara, welcome.
Denise and Barbara became very good friends.
Wow, this is really beautiful.
I know, right? Perfect. Come on, let me get you a drink.
Eventually, the estate is settled, so Ed sells the house, eager to get back to the U2.
You're gonna come visit me, right?
He could have the house, but he wanted to be on the water.
Denise must say goodbye to the new friend she's made.
Come on, let's hit the road.
I think Ed wanted to go back to the Keys because it went more along the lines of who Ed was.
Come on!
He wasn't the kind of guy that wanted to live in a house in a neighborhood with a pool, with three bedrooms and a pool.
It was none of Denise's decision. It was Ed wanted to move to the boat.
And in such close quarters, tension is inevitable.
You could have the perfect relationship and living on top of somebody, eventually you're going to have fights. You're going to have arguments.
I believe he put his foot down and said no more with the porcelain doll collection because there just isn't the room on a boat for that sort of thing to exist.
They knew basically that their relationship was not on good footing.
Now that Denise is 350 miles from confidant Barbara, she reconnects with friends at the marina.
Hey, guys, what's going on?
Hey, Denise, you want a beer?
Please. Thank you.
The longer you're somewhere you don't want to be, the worse it is. As long as she was there, it became a living hell to her.
Man, I do not know how you guys do this.
Denise grows especially close to David and Cindy Campbell, who live in the boat next door.
There's just not enough space for me living on a boat.
You get used to it. I mean, it took her a while, but she loves it now.
Yeah, but she has you with her. I'm stuck with Ed.
And us? You have us!
All right.
Come on.
Okay.
But just as she's settling back into boat life, tragedy strikes again.
In December 2006, Cindy Campbell was driving on the 18-mile stretch, which is the stretch of highway of US 1 that leads to and from Key Largo to the mainland. She suffered some kind of incident, and apparently it was an aneurysm, lost control of the car, and drove off into the mangroves.
Sadly, Cindy does not survive the accident, and the tragedy sets the Bozarth love boat into deadly waters.
Denise had asked Barbara to stand guard.
As long as you didn't cross him, he was a very friendly guy.
Ed Ed and Denise Bozarth lose a neighbor from their tight-knit Florida community. Reeling from the shock, Denise sets out to comfort the new widower, David Campbell.
She felt concerned for David. She actually cooked meals for him. And at that point, she was getting more and more attracted to him and less attracted to Ed.
Over time, their relationship went from being platonic and just friendly to they began having an affair.
A few weeks later, Denise's good friend Barbara comes to visit and finds herself literally in between Denise's husband Ed and her new lover, David.
Barbara was a lookout while they did the nasty. So, because she made comments about the boat rocking and moaning and everything else coming from the boat.
Dave Campbell's boat was right next to the Bozarth's boat. When Ed first got his boat, it was called the U2. Now, certainly because of the affair and because of what Ed's knowledge of the affair might have been, Ed named it the Screw U2.
I would say that was as clear of a message as you could make without taking paint and painting it on your boat. I know you're doing this.
My dad was a really quiet person. If you crossed him and he wanted to be vindictive about it, he would walk away and then he would come back and do something at a later date that you wouldn't expect.
It's become evident that Denise has cheated on Ed again. And so that suggests to us that her stated guilt and remorse over having done it the first time were completely disingenuous.
Denise and Ed's relationship was built on her needing him. And she needed everything from him, from a place to live, to a job, to companionship. Now, as the relationship is evolving, it seems that Denise doesn't need him at all, that he's sort of a useless burden. And so that has to be really hard on him because he doesn't get to be the hero anymore. It's almost like he's the annoyance. What worries me about that is that there might be true aggression and anger bubbling underneath that. And at what point is Ed going to realize that he actually is really angry with her for what she's doing to him and their children? And is he going to act out?
Everyone waits on tenterhooks for Ed to snap. But Denise doesn't let it come to that.
Okay, wait for mommy.
She sent her children up to Devoniac Springs to live with her parents. She was going to tell Ed she was leaving.
Little do Ed or Denise know, it might be the last time they see the kids. It's suddenly very quiet on Ed and Denise's boat. Too quiet. And within a week, it's clear that something is very, very wrong.
An awful smell started wafting out of the boat.
The odor is first noticed by a downwind neighbor, Chris Fleming.
He was actually a local firefighter. Certainly he recognized the smell of death. He thought it was a dead cat. I mean, as the Keys has a lot of stray cats.
Chris took a look inside the boat. Smelled something intense. And he called the police. And the deputies came. They went into the boat, just chasing the odor, the smell of death.
Ed and Denise's wedding photos were turned upside down, and both their wedding bands, sets of wedding bands, were also on top of the bunk.
And one of the deputy followed his nose, and I'm assuming the flies.
The engine compartment to find the body.
They found just a grisly scene.
From the flies to the maggots to the smell, just to the pure putrid body. You're having a whirlwind of nasty.
it's Ed.
Ed was in a canvas sail bag, tied up in knots with ropes.
He had a towel over his head. He was in the fetal position. He was basically hogtied.
The way that my dad was murdered was brutal.
The death is immediately ruled a homicide by blunt force trauma, but it's impossible to say how long he's been there or exactly how he was beaten.
There is a speculation that the murder weapon is a hammer of some sort.
So the AC was turned down to 60, so it was very cold in the cabin of the boat, but because of the bunk and because of the cushions and because of the mattress, the AC in the cabin didn't affect the temperature of the engine compartment. So any plan to slow the decomposition did not work. It was pointless.
Yeah, they were dusted for anything they can in the place. There was a piece of rug missing, and they took samples around that area looking for blood.
Aside from that, there are no obvious clues. Just the usual suspects.
Denise Bozarth?
Yeah?
When was the last time you saw your husband?
The first suspect was Denise. Here was the wife who had pulled up and left town, and her husband was never seen again.
June 23rd. I broke it off, and he was angry. I just can't believe he's dead.
Her hands were shaking. She was smoking her cigarette. She wouldn't look at me. She would take her cigarette. She would look kind of in the distance.
What happened to your carpet?
Well, we got rid of it because, I mean, we accidentally spilled some oil on it. Don't you want to know about Ed, though? I mean, why are you asking me about a carpet?
Can you tell me what happened?
I said that I didn't want to be with him anymore, and we got into a big fight.
What are you doing? Huh? What are you doing?
Ed, I'm sorry. I can't do this anymore.
Can't do what?
I want a divorce.
You better be off this boat when I come back. You hear me?
And then he just left.
What did you do next?
I was already packed and ready to go, so I left.
She never sees Ed again. Police are naturally dubious, but when they track down neighbors at the marina, her story holds up.
Yeah, we all knew she was leaving, and we helped her pack her car.
Denise made no secret around the marina that she was leaving him. She, in fact, told everyone that would listen that she was leaving him. It took a long time to pack her car, and she went to Pontiac Springs a week before the body was found.
And later that day, Ed was reportedly seen smoking on the dock.
Davis stated to the police that he had witnessed Ed walking around the marina after Denise had left.
To police, this is a real mystery. If Denise is not Ed's killer, who is?
His past might have caught up with him.
Arianna Bozarth Weston. Yes, we've been meaning to speak with you.
Ed Bozarth is brutally beaten to death on his boat in a marina in the Florida Keys. But Denise, his wife of almost 9 years, has an alibi. She was with her parents and children 650 miles north of the crime. Back in Key Largo, police cast a wider net for other suspects when one lands in their lap.
I found out about the murder merely by email from Denise. I'm writing to let you know that your dad is dead. And that was it.
Ariana calls the sheriff's department for more information.
Ariana Bozarth Weston. Yes, we've been meaning to speak with you.
She's in for a surprise.
According to the lead detective, he said that I was a person of interest.
She's recently returned from Germany and settled in Texas. So police want to know why flight logs show she was in Tampa, Florida, around the time of Ed's death.
He said that it was very plausible that I could go from Tampa down to Key Largo, kill my dad, and back to Tampa before anybody realized.
But Ariana, too, has a logical explanation for why she wasn't at home in Texas.
I went to Florida so that my dad could meet his granddaughter.
Her emails and phone calls had gone unanswered, so she showed up to deliver the big news in person.
And when I went to Inverness, I found out that the house had been sold. And that was the first that I had known that they were no longer there.
Ariana has no motive and is quickly dropped as a person of interest. David Campbell is the next to be hauled in.
Their relationship was explored in depth by the detectives.
Could David have killed Ed so he could have Denise all to himself?
He was a suspect, and they decided to give him a polygraph.
On the polygraph, he admits to the affair. But when asked if he killed Ed, his answer is no. And it looks like he's telling the truth. No sooner did they let David Campbell go when a tip comes in.
Detective Terry.
An anonymous caller claims that this was the work of a drug lord bent on revenge.
Ed was a pilot by trade before they moved to Key Largo. And there were a lot of rumors that he worked for the DEA and even the CIA.
I heard that from a lot of people. Maybe he was murdered by some insidious figure from his past, a drug dealer that we don't know. Maybe he just really angered the wrong people and it was coming back to roost.
I'm about positive that if he did work for the government, that he did have enemies. There's no doubt in my mind that there would have been enemies.
As police hunt down this lead, Ed's loved ones say goodbye.
I was devastated about losing him after just finding him. What I wanted was basically justice to be served.
The drug lord lead goes nowhere. Denise resettles the family near her parents. Ariana eventually returns to her new home in Texas. David goes back to his life as a widower. And even in the South Florida heat, by 2010, the case has grown so deadly cold, police drop it.
The explanations they gave were that there's no physical evidence. They didn't find a murder weapon. They didn't have any DNA evidence. They just said they didn't have enough.
Having this case go cold is very difficult on Ed's loved ones because part of what people need in a time of grief is some closure. It doesn't take the pain away, but it makes you stop wondering. And so the fact that they are still left with so many unanswered questions makes it hard to grieve.
I think when someone is murdered, there's the loss of the companionship and the interaction, contact with the person who passed away, Ed in this case, but there's also the loss of the sense that the world is predictable and safe. That's the part that law enforcement and the justice system can help with. And so when it's clear that the person was murdered and it was done in a horrifically grisly kind of a way, and so there's somebody out there who has escaped accountability for that, I think it just sort of keeps the wound open, or keeps one of the wounds open for the loved ones as long as that persists.
A year goes by, but Ariana doesn't give up.
There was a gut feeling that she had done it. And that gut feeling is what caused me to push and fight for his case to be solved.
The pressure stays on until there is literally a new sheriff in town and a new state's attorney.
The detective that worked on the case originally retired. A new detective came aboard and wanted to look at it again.
Robert Collin, Detective Jason Madnick. You mind if I ask you a few questions?
Detective Jason Madnick's fresh interviews bring fresh revelations.
The last time I saw Ed and Denise was in Key Largo on their boat.
Barbara disclosed to them that Denise had made specific statements to her about wishing Ed would be dead.
It'd just be so much better if he wasn't around.
And she had specifically stated that she wanted to smash Ed's head in with a hammer.
It'd actually be super easy just to bash his head in while he was sleeping.
That she could kill him and place him inside of a plastic sheet and store his body inside of a air-conditioned area to prevent it from decomposing.
Stop joking around. Oh, I mean, just hypothetically, obviously. I'm kidding, right?
And the manner in which she said she would kill him was very similar to the manner in which he died.
It's not a smoking gun, but it is compelling. And more than 5 years after Ed's murder, Denise Bozarth is hauled in and arrested.
All right, Denise, you have the right to remain silent. Anything you say can be used against you in a court of law. You have the right to talk to a lawyer and have him present while you're being questioned.
They didn't really have any physical evidence. They had DNA, but of course there would be DNA. She lived on the boat. They never found a murder weapon. They basically had circumstantial evidence.
Having these rights in mind, do you wish to talk to us?
They're hoping for a confession, but nothing goes as planned.
He recanted and said he said it to protect her.
I know it was thrown out by the judge.
More than 5 years after Ed Bozarth is bludgeoned to death on his boat, his widow, Denise, is brought in for questioning.
Having these rights in mind, do you wish to talk to us now? That is the question.
Yes.
She waived her right to seek counsel at that time, and she continued to maintain her innocence and gave the same story to police that she had been giving for several years.
I had taken my kids to my parents, and then I told Ed that I was leaving him, that it was over.
I'm leaving.
And we had a fight. He said that he was going out for a walk, and that when he got back, that I'd better be gone.
You want to get back from here?
I don't know what happened. Whoever killed him must have done it after I left.
This is old news to police and prosecutors, and they don't buy it.
What about the rings and the photo on the bed?
They push for more.
Why were they left exactly in the same place that you put them if the killer had to move them in order to hide the body?
Pressed further by police, she pauses and she states to one of the agents in the room,
I need to speak with a lawyer.
Denise is told she can contact her attorney, but then the subject is quickly changed and questioning resumes.
Denise, you need to tell me what happened.
Was it something that happened quick? Yes.
After a couple of hours of questioning, Denise buckles.
I did it.
But there's another element to her story.
He had a gun to my head.
What are you doing?
I'm gonna kill you and the kids.
She said it was in self-defense. She said that she woke up and Ed was standing over her with a gun. So she grabbed a hammer and beat his head in.
No! Ah!
But police and prosecutors don't buy this self-defense story for several reasons.
What about the gun?
I threw it in the trash.
I don't believe that she was faced with a imminent threat of deadly force against her.
And she had plenty of motive, starting with Ed's $650,000 inheritance.
There was this big pot of money. Denise realized that if Ed died, if she could get away with killing him, she could get the money.
Also, who sleeps with a hammer?
Why Denise would have a hammer in bed with her is a very good question.
It'd actually be super easy just to bash his head in while he was sleeping.
Instead, they suspect a very different scenario played out that morning in June.
You're so irritating. Nothing good to say.
You think I'm irritating? What about this you've been putting me through, living on this boat? Why do you think I leave you all the time? Why do you think I'm never here anymore? Because you're pathetic, you're weak, and you're old, and you're miserable.
You know what?
What?
I want a divorce. I want out, and I'm not giving you a dime. Oh, and the kids? You're not getting the kids either.
Yeah, well, we'll see about that.
After taking care of the body, she cleans up the bloody rug and tries to make it look like the couple was just going their separate ways. On March 15th, 2012, Denise Bozarth is charged with first-degree murder.
She admitted killing Ed.
But there's a snag.
Also during the interview, several times she brought up whether she should have a lawyer present. Legally, the detectives were obligated to stop the interview at that point.
I'm going to be able to talk to my attorney today.
You call anybody you want.
I don't know anybody. It's just that I get the money.
In pre-trial hearings, her confession is ruled as inadmissible.
I know she did confess. I know it was thrown out by the judge.
Prosecutors agree to a plea bargain.
Because the judge ruled her confession inadmissible, trying her on a first-degree murder charge would be very difficult. And that's why they decided to go with second-degree murder.
What I wanted was basically justice to be served. I wanted her to be sentenced. I wanted her to be convicted. She ended up getting 14 years. And the peace of mind that I get from that is that she's got a murder conviction on her record. Basically, it will haunt her for the rest of her life.
I think what strikes me most about Ed and Denise's story is the danger in trying to rescue somebody. Ed, looking back, thinking he was doing a good thing in rescuing her, was really setting himself up to be used and ultimately murdered by a very cold, very calculating young woman who appeared to be just an innocent damsel in distress.
What sticks out to me the most about Ed and Denise's story is that Denise seems to have a history of lacking emotion and just moving on. Starting at the very beginning, when we find out that she has lost custody of her children, she's still this carefree, happy, young, wanting to become a shrimp boating kind of a girl, instead of the grieving mother who just lost custody of her two children, rolling all the way into being able to bludgeon to death the man that she married and gave birth to children with, and then cover up his murder. The entire relationship, Denise showed a lack of respect and a lack of an emotional attachment to Ed. And I think both of those things made it a lot easier for her to kill him.
I think a lot of times people look at a situation like this and say, well, if Denise was so unhappy, why didn't she just leave? And that's what a lot of normal people would do. But somebody who's sociopathic would look and go, well, which exit strategy would get me the most?
Most believe it was all about the money.
Certainly, the $650,000 Ed's inheritance was a motive in the murder, but there was also a lot of tension in their relationship that was coming to a head, evidenced by the affair.
But Ariana thinks there's more to it than that.
I know that the detectives believe it was money, but given the fact that she had vowed to me that nobody would ever take her kids from her again, I wholeheartedly believe that was her motive.
Yeah, Ed's murder was senseless when you look back on it. I mean, not only are two children without a father, now they're without a mother.
I miss talking with him. I miss laughing and joking about how much we act alike, even though we never spent that much time together. I can't talk to him anymore because of her.